Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Turn up your volume, because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast, with Tony Maradero.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the bomb!
Sports entertainement like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la bonne! C'est le dégagement et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens, le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaB.TV. It's gonna be sick.
Marinaro on this Tuesday night. It is May 16. It's 2 minutes past 10 o'clock, and we are live on YouTube, live on Facebook, and live on Twitter. It is the Sick Podcast. We're going to go till at least 11 o'clock, and we have a good one lined up tonight because Ryan Sporer of the Hockey Writers, he wrote a great piece on what the Montreal Canadiens can learn from the four teams remaining in the playoffs, and we're going to get to Ryan in just a minute. About 30 minutes from now, we are going to Toronto to talk to Steve Simmons of the Toronto Sun on who's going to pay the price, because yesterday we had a chance to hear from Kyle Dubas, who doesn't even know if he has it in him to return. Maybe he will. Maybe he's going to have to take some time away, take a sabbatical, because it's been a very taxing season on him and on his family. So we're going to hear from Austin Matthews. We're going to hear from Mitch Marner. We're going to hear from Morgan Riley, Nylander. We're even going to hear from my buddy Carlo Kolejakovo, who earlier this morning basically said, you want to pin the blame on somebody? He knows who to pin it on. And we're going to hear what he had to say as well. We're going to get to all of that. The Sick Podcast is brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, who was recently named by Deloitte and CIBC as one of Canada's best managed companies. This comes to no surprise to me, folks. I'll tell you that right now. I could have told you that a long time ago, but it was made official last week. The country's leading business award, recognizing innovative and world-class companies, the best managed Canadian companies designation fuels Energy's purpose for creating progress for their customers, their employees, and their communities. Join a winning team and check out Energy's career page for available opportunities. I love those guys. I also love the Geloso Beverage Group, distributors of Labitta TV. Brewed in Quebec, a winner of a dozen international awards, Labitta TV offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. Labitta TV, embrace your true nature. And XL Moto, premier motorcycle and scooter dealership in Montreal for over 20 years. Big-time dealer of the Piaggio Group, which is Aprilia and Piaggio, and, of course, Vespa. And their dealership carries seven different motorcycle and scooter brands. And once again, the number one Aprilia and Piaggio ambassadors for the last 5 years. XL Moto, your ultimate destination and best customer service experience, 5480 Pare. You could check them out at xlmoto.com. You got the number there. You can give them a call. And in my opinion, if you're going to pick up a Vespa in the city, that's the place you have to pick it up. Why? Because Tony Marinaro said so. That's why. Special hello to everyone watching us on YouTube Live, on Twitter Live, and on Facebook Live. And without further ado, I'm going to bring in a gentleman who has joined us on the Sick Podcast before. Yes, he has. And he is Ryan Sporer of the Hockey Writers. And we'll bring him in. Here we go. Hold on a second.
Hello.
Okay, and we have Ryan. Ryan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing extremely well. Thank you very much. And I talked about it. You wrote a piece, and you talked about what the Montreal Canadiens can learn from the four teams that are remaining in the playoffs. There you go. It's a copycat league, and there are lessons every team can learn from the Cup semifinalists. The Canadiens look to be on their way, though. Go Habs, go, you say. What the Canadiens can learn from the 2023 Cup semifinalists. So you talk about it being a copycat league. Is that what you find has happened over the past couple of years, that several teams will take a look at the teams that are in the Final Four and say, hey, you know what? Let's take a look at what's going on. Why are they there? How did they get there? And maybe there's something that we can learn from some of these teams.
I mean, I'd say so. I think when the Canadiens lost to the Tampa Bay Lightning in the Stanley Cup Final a few seasons ago, everyone kind of stopped and reassessed how the Canadiens got there and what they can do to maybe get over the hump. Obviously, things took a turn for the worse with Carey Price and Shea Weber retiring.
Yeah.
But in a way, that's kind of an opportunity to get those contracts off the books and maybe start fresh. And I think, for example, the Carey Price contract was kind of an albatross.
Yeah. And
for example, and I mentioned the piece, you know, one of the lessons I think should be learned is that you don't necessarily need an elite goalie, or especially one with a $10.5 million cap hit, to go far.
But then again, just for the sake of conversation here, because it's much more interesting when we can probably spark up a debate, Ilya Bryzgalov is a $10.5 million goalie, and I know he hasn't played like it over the past several years, but he has played like it this year in the playoffs.
You mean
Sergei Bobrovsky. Yeah. Where did I get Ilya Bryzgalov, by the way? Does Bryzgalov sound like Bobrovsky? Yeah, a little bit. Yes, it starts with a B. Other than that, no. Sergei Bobrovsky, pardon me, of the Florida Panthers. I mean, he looks like the goalie that he used to be with the Columbus Blue Jackets back in the day that was sporting the best numbers. That's the reason why he got that contract of $10.5 million. What do you make of him?
I think that, you know, kudos to Sergei Bobrovsky and the Florida Panthers, obviously. You know, he's playing well. I just think he's notoriously inconsistent. And, you know, his success, current success notwithstanding, I think that if the Panthers had had the chance to get rid of that contract heading into the playoffs, they would have taken that. I mean, they probably wouldn't be as far as they are right now without him. I'll readily admit that. But
Yeah. Sometimes the best trades are the ones you don't make, right? Because you're right. You would think that if you take a look at their goalie situation, their cap situation, that if they could have found a taker for Bobrovsky, he would have been gone. But if he would have been gone, they wouldn't have beat the Boston Bruins. And they wouldn't beat the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's very possible. I mean, Alex Lyon, who had started the playoff run for the Panthers, had played competently. I'll give him that. And I don't think that they would have been in the Bruins without Bobrovsky. But Maple Leafs, who knows? And it's a moot point. But all that to say, I think that the Panthers are kind of, and I mentioned the Panthers obviously in the piece as well. I think they're proof that, you know, and maybe Bobrovsky is a, you know, proof of this as well, that anything can happen is once you get into the playoffs. I don't think anyone foresaw Bobrovsky standing on his head to the degree he has. And I don't think anyone really saw Panthers rekindling their, you know, President's Trophy winning mojo from last season and knocking off Bruins after just sneaking into the playoffs.
But this is what I like about your piece is that you take a look at the four teams and you identify Vegas as the team where you say the Canadiens don't need another Carey Price. And then you take a look at the other teams and you talk about what they have that the Canadiens don't have and all that stuff. So what does Vegas have to be where they are because they don't have a Carey Price in goal. As a matter of fact, you're right about that. As a matter of fact, on paper, they have lesser names than they have had for several years, probably since they've been in the league. You know, they're not going forward with a Robin Lehner. They're not going forward with a Marc-Andre Fleury. So, you know, and what do they have?
They have an incredibly balanced lineup through, you know, top to bottom. And I think if the Canadians, like hypothetical scenario, if the Canadians have an opportunity to switch rosters, you know, with the Vegas Golden Knights, I think they would take it in a heartbeat. I think any fan would. You know, you've got Mark Stone, you've got Pietrangelo on the back end, you've got William Karlsson, who's an incredible two-way center. Marchessault, who's, you know, threw away for all intents and purposes. Same with Ryan Smith. I mean, they've got an incredible top nine and, you know, a back end that's, you know, aside from Pietrangelo, maybe, and Shea Theodore, maybe not as many big names, but still very competent blue line.
You know what they have? And I think you put it right when you said that they have an imbalance, a balanced lineup. They definitely do. Their top four on defense reminds me of the top four the Canadiens had a couple of years ago when they got to the final.
Yeah. I mean, but to be fair, that, you know, the Canadiens top four, that's that at the playoffs, they were playing mind-blowingly above their heads. But
yes. Yeah. But they were a playoff top four.
Yeah.
You know, you take a look at Ben Chiarot for 82 games in a season. You take a look at Joel Edmondson for 82 games in a season. And chances are you're not going to love them as much as a 28-game, maximum 28-game cup run in the playoffs. Because it's more defensive in the playoffs. There's more clutching and grabbing. There's more holding. You get away with more infractions. You get away with more physicality. You get away with more stick work. But if I take a look at the top four for the Vegas Golden Knights, and yes, you're right. They are very complete at center. They're pretty deep with Eichel and Chandler Stephenson and William Karlsson on the wing on their top three lines. They have three different players that can produce offense in Jonathan Marchessault and Mark Stone and Riley Smith, to name a few. But on defense, Alex Pietrangelo, who would be, let's just say, their version of Shea Weber, being their best defenseman, Shea Theodore, Alec Martinez, and Braden McNabb. Maybe different style defensemen that the Canadiens had, but a team that is very, very reliant on their top four. Very reliant.
Sure.
All right, let's take a look at other teams. What can the Canadiens learn from the team that's going up against Vegas, the Dallas Stars?
This is kind of a tough one because I think that it's more so just optimism in the sense that, you know, the Dallas Stars, they kind of were the team right before the Canadiens to get beaten by the Lightning in the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
And they actually missed the playoffs the following season, much like the Canadiens did, you know, finishing last place right after, you know, they reached the Stanley Cup final. So I think that there's a degree of maybe that can happen to the Canadiens in the sense that, you know, they're not necessarily far off from, you know, another run to, you know, the Final Four, hopefully maybe a Stanley Cup final appearance. Granted, the Canadiens have obviously missed the playoffs for a second straight season, but I do believe that they're trending up. I mean, last place last season, fifth from last this season. I think there was a lot more optimism in the air, patience as well, but optimism nevertheless with regard to how they were generally in game start to finish, despite losses.
But okay, so you know, you talk about the road back to responsibility doesn't have to be long. And that Dallas was able to turn it around in a short period of time. But here's the deal, though. You know the same argument you made that, you know, Vegas has showed us that you don't need a Carey Price in goal. But Dallas has showed us that if you have a guy who could be as hot as Carey Price, well, then you can go far, too. So
that's true. Jake Ottinger, obviously. But that's true of pretty much any team. Like, you need to be peaking at the right time, including in net, and anyone can theoretically, you know, take the reins in net. Yeah, I mean, it would be great to have an Ottinger in net over, say, a Samuel Montembeau, who I have to give props to. Really, he proved me wrong this season with, you know, playing the way he did. I think he's shown incredible upside, maybe to the point of being a legitimate quality backup in the NHL moving forward.
Yeah. He's showing his worth with Canada at the World Championships as well.
Yeah, kudos to him. And I definitely look forward to seeing what he can do next season. I do believe, I mean, it remains to be seen what happens, but I believe he's done enough to earn at least, you know, the interim number one spot over Jake Allen. I don't believe he's the number one in this league. I hope he proves me wrong, but I think that if you can get an Ottinger at a cost-effective price, draft them, for example, and, you know, take advantage of that entry-level deal, you'd obviously prefer to have someone of that caliber over Montembeau, over Jake Allen.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily a luxury every team has, especially at, you know, that price point. So you have to determine where you want to spend your cap space. And I don't believe it's necessarily in net. I think you want to insulate your goaltending with, you know, pretty good offense up front, pretty good defense on the back end. And that's proven to be, you know, a recipe that works.
So when you talk about the Dallas Stars and the road back to respectability, how long do you think that road back is for the Montreal Canadiens when you take a look into your crystal ball?
I honestly believe that next season they'll be competing for a playoff spot up until the trade deadline, at which point it won't really make sense for general manager Kent Hughes to, you know, sell off assets for the purposes, or sorry, become buyer at the trade deadline for the sake of cup run. I don't think they'll have the horses to do it next season, but I think that they'll be even more competitive and be in the playoff picture for a long while. I just think a lot of...
I hear you, but I don't know, Ryan, if they're going to have the courage. If, let's just say, if they're in a playoff spot next year, the week of the deadline, or on deadline day, they're in the top eight, they're in a playoff spot, I just don't think that next year they're going to have the courage to be a seller. Now, once again, if I were a betting man today, right now, I would bet the Canadians do not make the playoffs next year and that they'll make the playoffs the year after that. But I will reiterate once again that if trade deadline week next year or the day of the deadline, the Montreal Canadiens are in a playoff spot, I don't see how they end up being a seller.
Let me clarify. I don't think they'll be in a playoff spot. I think they'll be in the mix, kind of like where the Ottawa Senators were at the time of the trade deadline.
Okay.
I think Hughes will have to properly assess the situation and determine that, okay, it's not going to happen. It's similar to what Steve Yzerman did with the Red Wings this season. I mean, they were right there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he didn't sell off assets or he didn't make a move at the deadline to push the team over the hump. So I think that, you know, there's a case to be made for both sides, but, you know, I don't believe that the Canadiens are going to be a playoff team next season, maybe the year after. I do believe that there is a way where they contend for the Stanley Cup by 2025, 2026. It's possible, but they do need to find someone to replace Montembeau, because I don't believe that he's the goaltender of the future.
All right. Okay. I hear you. Why do you think Dadonov's working out in Dallas a lot more than he worked out in Montreal?
I mean, I don't think he, I mean, it's hard for me to say because I'm not in his head, but I don't think he really wanted to be in Montreal, which is fair considering the rebuild. You know, he did nix the trade at the last trade deadline to the Ducks, if I remember correctly. So it wasn't exactly the kind of situation he really wanted to be in. or sorry, he didn't nix. He tried to nix the trade, yeah. And the trade got canceled. Those were the circumstances because his no trade clause wasn't honored. All that to say, I mean, I think that the Dallas Stars have a much better team than the Canadiens, or at least a much healthier team than the Montreal Canadiens. And he was able to, you know, get the proper teammates to, you know, for the longest time, he was kind of floundering in the bottom six with the Canadiens. He's got a deeper lineup with the Stars.
Well, and he's playing with Wyatt Johnston and Jamie Benn. That's not too shabby, eh?
Well, Johnston is obviously, you know, on the rise. The rookie had a good rookie season, and Ben, yeah. he had a good season too. He's seen better days, I think, from a production standpoint overall, but yeah. I think he had a bit of a resurgence this season.
Brian, you got to like the Dallas Stars at center, eh? Rupe Hintz, Max Domi, Wyatt Johnston, and Radek Faxon. For those Canadiens fans who are watching right now saying, hold on a second here. Max Domi, well, Max Domi has 11 points in 13 playoff games. He's bringing it in the playoffs, man. He's bringing it.
Yeah, but Dadonov has like 9, so.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah. I liked Domi with the Canadiens. It's a shame that it didn't work out. But, yeah, I can't really. I think that the Canadiens are in a better position moving forward, you know, with their young guns, the way things have panned out. And I don't know if they'd be in the same position with all their prospects had Domi stayed.
Yeah, well, listen, it was a great year, yeah, with the Canadiens when he picked up 72 points. There's no doubt about that. But after that, unfortunately, the year after that, he found himself on the fourth line down the stretch with a Claude Julien coach team. Remember that?
I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah, that was, my God, the way things change, and they change pretty fast. Huh? All right, okay, let's take a look at some of the other teams and the Carolina Hurricanes. What can the Canadiens learn from the Carolina Hurricanes?
Not to get rid of Jesperi Kotkaniemi, I guess.
Are you a fan?
I think he's gotten a bad reputation, and his name has been dragged through the mud for signing an offer sheet that anyone would have signed. That having been said, I think Marc Bergevin made the right decision not matching. I don't think he made the right decision getting Christian Dvorak with the compensation, but I don't think you pay Kotkaniemi that much.
I don't know if it's the right decision today. I mean, it looked like it, like if we talk strictly offer sheet,
yeah,
and over $6 million a year, yeah, you don't want to match that. But you take a look at the extension that he signed at the 4.8, I take that.
Oh, I'd take it too. I just think that there was no way to predict what would have happened with that extension at the time of the offer sheet. So I can't really blame Bergevin for not matching it. I maybe blame him for letting it get to the point, negotiations-wise, where he did not cock enemy, felt like he needed to sign that offer sheet. But what's done is done. I'd prefer to have Kotkaniemi too over Dvorak, but I don't dislike Dvorak. I just think Kotkaniemi has a higher ceiling, and he's proving that now. All that to say, what I really like about the Hurricanes is, well, I think that I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that they're the best teams left standing right now. And they're showing how, in spite of, you know, injuries to Max Pacioretty and Andre Svechnikov, that they've got an incredibly deep lineup. They know how to play. And I think a lot of the credit goes to Rod Brendamore, the coach, head coach. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think he's instilled this kind of culture that the Canadiens fans can maybe look to as a model for what, you know, Martin St. Louis has begun to instill, you know, in his charges. I think that I like St. Louis as this team's head coach. I'm not going to lie. I think he's a player's coach. I think he's the right coach for right now. And as he begins to gain more experience, he might even be the good, you know, the coach for when this team is ready to contend. And I think that this idea of he's instilled a winning culture on this team, I think that's kind of a misconception. So a lot of people point to, you know, the losses that they've sustained and say, well, it's not a winning culture. They're not winning. I think a winning culture is more indicative of, you know, them playing to win and, you know, playing from, you know, the opening whistle to the final buzzer every game. And sure, there were times when that wasn't the case, but by and large, that's what they did all season long. And I think with that attitude, you know, the turnaround isn't going to be that long. It's like I said, I feel like they're going to be competitive, you know, next season and in the mix for a playoff spot up until at least the trade deadline.
Who do you think they end up with at number five? And I know that it's all relative, all depending on who's going to go out in three and four. I think it's pretty safe to say that everyone thinks that Bedard will go one and Fantilli will go two. As you look in your crystal ball, how do you see the third pick going, the fourth pick going, and ultimately who the Canadiens select with their fifth pick?
I'll tell you that I don't think it's going to happen, but I'd love for them, if he's available, to pick Matvei Mikhailov out of the KHL. I think that he's the second best prospect available behind Bedard. And I think that the Canadiens could really use a player of his caliber because they are lacking that top end skill up front. I mean, they've got Suzuki, they've got Caulfield, but I think a guy like Mikhailov would be a perfect complement to those players.
I you know what? I'm not going to disagree with you. I mean, Michkov's talent is pretty self-explanatory, but I have a feeling he's going to slide in the draft. I don't know how much he's going to slide. I think he will be available to the Canadiens at five, and I believe they will pass.
I wouldn't. I can understand that. I you know, I've heard, you know, rumors that maybe they're going with, maybe slightly off the board with rumors. I've heard the read the reports that they might go with Reinbacher, for example, a red defense, right-handed defenseman. But, you know, they'd be going off the board to do that. And I think if you're kind of resigned to going off the board and picking a lesser player with that fifth overall pick, it makes sense to take a chance on Mikhailov. That's just my two cents. Yeah. I think that you have...
I don't know if they're going to have the courage to go off the board in a draft like this. Mind you, the Red Wings back in the day of the Moritz Seider draft, they did, because a lot of people thought that Moritz Seider was going to end up going 15, 16, 17, whatever it was. They ended up picking him, what was it? I don't know, six or seven or whatever. And I guess they have no complaints because he's turned out to be a pretty amazing defenseman. You know what I mean?
That's true. And I can't lay claim to any knowledge that of, you know, who they're going to pick or if that pick is going to pan out. I think that they're in a good position to pick a great player, and I'm willing to give Hughes the benefit of the doubt. I didn't necessarily agree with the Slafkovský pick, but again, we'll see. We've got a few years before we find out, you know, if he pans out. And
so, you hold on a second. You disagree with the Slafkovský pick. Who would you have picked?
I personally would have picked Wright, but, you know, I would have gone with the center. So I think maybe Cooley at this point would have been the better option. I like Doc. I think he's worked out. So I can't really – I think if they had Doc in their back pockets at the draft, which they did, I can understand the pick a lot more.
So in ending, what do you think that Montreal Canadiens can learn from the final team that we didn't get to, even though we did talk about Bobrovsky, from the Florida Panthers?
Well, I think just that, like I said, anything can happen. Who knows? I think that once they get in, then whenever that is, it magic can happen. And we know from experience from just a few seasons ago what happened when they just got into the playoffs. They reached the Stanley Cup final. And yeah, they got outclassed by the Lightning, but, you know, it was a magical run, and it was the first time really I had a chance to experience that in my lifetime. I was around for the 93 Cup, but I wasn't old enough to really understand the magnitude of what I was watching. Yeah. So it was fun. It was really fun to watch that.
And yeah, I know it looked like the Panthers weren't going to make the playoffs at one point, but now that we see the way they performed in the playoffs, I think it's pretty safe to say that they resemble more the Panthers of 1 year ago than they did during this past regular season. Of course, there was a big trade that was made. They traded Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar to the Calgary Flames. In return, they got Matthew Tkachuk. A lot of people at the time thought that Florida lost on that deal and that Calgary was getting the better player straight up because Huberdeau had such a great season. But I think 1 year later, we're seeing Jonathan Huberdeau is not Matthew Tkachuk. Matthew Tkachuk was unbelievable in the regular season. He's been an unbelievable leader for that team. He's been unbelievable in the playoffs. And given his age and the fact that he's a lot younger than Jonathan Huberdeau, that looks like a big-time win for the Florida Panthers. I really enjoyed this conversation, Ryan. Thanks for joining me, and I hope to talk to you again soon, man. Have a great summer, if I don't.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. There you have it, Ryan Spoor. We're now leaving Montreal, and we are going to Toronto because, of course, it was several days ago that Toronto Maple Leafs were eliminated in round two, 6 games to the Florida Panthers in Toronto. Man, that hurts. And, you know, going into the playoffs, if you would have told Toronto that they were going to get eliminated, or Maple Leafs fans, they were going to get eliminated in round two in 6 games, maybe some Leafs fans would have taken it because, of course, they hadn't passed the first round in the longest time. But even though they did now and they beat the Tampa Bay Lightning, there are a lot of people disappointed in Toronto. And one guy who's been covering the Leafs for a very, very long time, and man, he really knows how to get people going when he writes about them. It's a pleasure for me to talk to Steve Simmons of the Toronto Sun. Steve, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, Steve. It's not the first time I've had you on. I'd love to have you on more often because you generate a lot of reaction. I know you know that with your columns and with your comments. You kind of say it like the way it is. Some people have a hard time taking it. I personally love it. So here, how about that comment I made before when I said, if you would have told Leafs fans probably a month and a half ago, that the Leafs were going to get eliminated in the second round, that most of them would probably take it, but yet it seems like no one's happy with their elimination now. Your thoughts on that?
Well, if it were going to be eliminated in the second round by the Boston Bruins having a record-breaking season for points and wins, then probably people would have taken it. To get eliminated by the Florida Panthers, who made the playoffs only because Pittsburgh lost to Chicago 2 or 3 days left in the season. If Pittsburgh wins that game, Pittsburgh's in the playoffs, and Florida's not. So to lose to a Florida team, to get whacked, and I repeat the word, whacked by the Florida Panthers, the Leafs never showed up for the first 3 games of the series. It was like they just thought, oh, we'll get here, we'll play, we'll win, we'll move on. I don't think they took the Panthers lightly or they didn't respect the process. But whatever it was, it didn't work for them. They actually, it's funny, they didn't have a great first round. They got fortunate. Things bounced their way and went their way. And I thought of the 6 games with Tampa, I thought they were the better team in 2 of them. But they won in 6 and give them that. And when you can beat a team with John Cooper coaching and Hedman playing defense and Vasilevsky in goal, you've accomplished something. And the city went crazy because it's been so long.
So I don't disagree with you, but and we're going to get to that in just a second. But that's one way of looking at it. They lost to that Florida team who should have missed the playoff if Pittsburgh was going to win their final game of the regular season. But that same Florida team beat that record-breaking Boston Bruin team that you talked about, despite being down 3-1 in round one and going to Boston and winning 2 games, game 5 and game 7, eliminating the Bruins in front of their fans. That's that same Florida Panthers team too.
Yeah, and I'm going to look at that 2 ways because I watched that series really closely.
Okay. And
hardly for a moment, I'm going back to game 1 here, as they took the lead in the series, the Bruins did not look like that team that had dominated the NHL all season long with their sound play in 3 zones. Suddenly, a team with great goaltending all season long wasn't getting great goaltending in the playoffs.
That's
suddenly,
true.
They didn't have Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci, you know, the 2 veteran centers who carried their offense, you know, so much of what with David Pastrnak all season long. So Pastrnak's not scoring. The 2 old guys aren't playing. And when they're playing hurt. So the Bruins did not in any way resemble that record-setting team. It was like that was a flawed hockey team. And the Panthers, God bless them, took advantage of it.
Yeah. Either it was a flawed hockey team or it was a hockey team who probably put too much onus on the regular season and you know, they had little gas left in the tank because they just consumed them. Could be that.
Yeah. You know, Jim Montgomery made a mistake. He rode them too hard.
I agree.
I think with 10, 15 games to go, they could have sort of, you know, slid to the finish line, and they didn't.
Yeah.
They went hard right to the end. And you know, I don't think they'd ever do that again, and I don't think he'd ever do that again.
Yeah.
And so the Leafs were of the mindset that second round, the test is Boston, and that's the best test you're going to get all year, and maybe they can get through, and maybe – they always played well with Boston.
Yeah.
So maybe that could happen. Maybe it couldn't, and then who knows after that.
It's funny you say that because I brought that up with Mark Bertrand a couple of weeks ago, the Sports Hub 98.5 in Boston. He's the midday show host or co-host, and I said that to him, and he said, yeah, but you have to understand – he said, Patrice Bergeron told Jim Montgomery down the stretch, you know what? We need to have everyone playing together because we need to have some chemistry going into the playoffs, because Montgomery at one point was starting to rest a few guys, and Bergeron said, it's not a good idea. And I said to Mark, I said, Mark, I completely understand, but who's coaching that team? Is it Jim Montgomery or is it Patrice Bergeron? I believe that Montgomery should have rested his guys. And by the way, if he would have rested Bergeron that final game of the regular season, he's not getting hurt. He's starting the playoffs because he got hurt in that game in Montreal.
You know, the old Marv Levy line from the coach of the Buffalo Bills and the Montreal Alouettes?
Montreal Alouettes, yes.
If you start listening to the fans, soon you're going to be sitting with them. And,
that's an amazing
that's
line.
That's for Marv.
Yeah.
I love the line. And it applies to coaches listening to players, too. Coaches have to do what coaches believe is right.
Yeah.
And yeah. A person like Bergeron, you do listen to, and, you know, because he's so accomplished and he, you know, he's done everything you could possibly do in hockey, and he's had a phenomenal Hall of Fame career. So you do listen. But sometimes you're not right. And, you know, look at Linus Allmark. He's going to win the Vezina Trophy. He's going to be the first All-Star team goalie. And he dumped the bed. In round one, he wasn't very good, and they waited too long then to pull him, and that was it. That was the end of it, and so the Bruins went, and the Leafs went with them, and the teams that played smarter, sounder, playoff style hockey, well, the four best are still playing.
They are, and you know, to the images of "We want Florida, we want Florida," Maple Leafs fans in Leaf Square saying that they wanted the Florida Panthers, they wanted to avoid the Boston Bruins. They wanted them, they got them. Can you begin to put into words what the atmosphere was like when Carter Verhaeghe scores that game-winning goal in overtime, and everyone in that building and the fan base, Maple Leaf fan base around the world, especially in Toronto, realized we just got eliminated by the Florida Panthers, the team that we thought that we were going to like eat up and spit out. Can you begin to put in the words, you know, the what was going on in that city?
I think the punch came after game three, not really at the after game five. It came after game three. They're down 3-0 to this team that barely made the playoffs. They're 19 points better than them, and they had not deserved to win any of the three games. And
yeah.
In game three, it was like the Leafs lost their heart. They lost their spirit. Whatever it is that pushes players was missing that night. And to quote my friend Ray Ferraro, who I think is the smartest commentator in hockey today, he said, if David Kampf is your best player, you have a problem. And in game three, David Kampf was the Leafs' best player, and they had a problem. They came back with a reasonably strong game four. Which was their only game of the series that as a fan you could or should be proud of. And then, you know, and then game five, they lost in overtime, but you know, throughout the game they were not the better team that night, and they didn't have the better chances, and they didn't deserve in any way to win the series. And so they go out, and the punch in the gut really came when they lost game three. Because if you win game three and it's 2-1 and now you're sort of believing you're back in this thing, and maybe your talent starts to take over.
I agree with you. 3-0 down is a mountain that seems too high to climb.
Well, it's been done, what, 3 or 4 times in hockey history and never in the NBA. You know, the Red Sox did it to the Yankees, but to be honest, it rarely, if ever, happens. And what often happens is at 3-0, the other team wins to sort of avoid being swept, and then they lose game five. you know, you've put everything out for that one game.
Yeah.
And you know, I hate that expression.
By the way, I don't know if I said at one point that they lost in six, but yes, they obviously lost in five. But, you know, even though you said that, you know, we talked about the mountain too big to climb, Steve, I don't know about you. Maybe I got the feeling that if Toronto was going to score and win that game to over in overtime, that series was going to go seven. Obviously, we can throw that out the window because it didn't happen. And even if it would have happened, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to seven. But, you know, the way Toronto got back in that game, because they were down 2-0 at home, and they're able to clutch and claw their way back in that game, and they tie it up and stuff like that. But you wrote a piece. You wrote a couple of pieces now in the Toronto Sun over the past couple of days, where, you know, a lot of Leafs Nation and hockey fans around the world are looking, and they're looking at Dubas, and some of them are looking at Keefe, and some of them are looking at Matthews, and some of them are looking at Marner, and some of them are looking at Nylander, and maybe a couple less are looking at Tavares. But you wrote a piece about Brendan Shanahan, and I thought it was a very, very logical piece, because at the end of the day, it's Shanahan that wanted to go with Dubas. Dubas ended up going with Keefe. It's Shanahan's responsibility. And if Shanahan is replaced, then you'd think a new president will bring in his own general manager, and a new general manager will bring in his own coach. But if Shanahan remains, then it's interesting to see what happens after that. So let me ask you this. I'm going to ask you, should he stay or should he go? And I'd love to know your reasoning why. Brendan Shanahan, should he stay or should he go?
I'm a huge Brendan Shanahan fan, both personally and professionally. And okay. If I was the owner of the Maple Leafs, I would replace him tomorrow. I think 9 years is a great run. He's done some amazing things here. He has turned the franchise from sort of laughingstock to very credible. Unfortunately, not credible enough come playoff time. And he put his faith in Kyle Dubas as general manager, and Kyle Dubas's belief of talent trumps all, you know, has been proven not to be successful come playoff time. And Kyle's, you know, hand-picked coach is Sheldon Keefe, who was his coach in junior hockey and his coach with the Marlies and now his coach with the Leafs. Those two are connected at the hip. Shanahan's connected to one. So I think if one goes, basically they all go. But I don't know if any of that's happening. And the thing is, when you don't have real ownership, and by that I mean the one person who owns the team, the George Steinbrenner, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah.
They have corporate ownership. And two corporations who can't stand each other own 75% of the team, each 37.5%.
Bell so and Bell Sportsnet, and Rogers, for those watching, yeah.
Yeah. Bell and Rogers, you know I mean, who can't decide that today is Monday, let alone tomorrow being Tuesday or the next day being Wednesday, whatever day it is, they can't agree on what day it is. They're going to have to now put their heads together and make a decision. And Larry Tannenbaum, who they let sort of play as the de facto owner,
yeah,
he's the 25% guy who really can't make a decision in this case. It's got to come for those two guys have to put their heads together, or those two companies have to put their heads together and decide what they're going to do. And neither of them are in the hockey business. And frankly, neither of them probably should be in the hockey business. But they're the ones who are going to make the most important decision of what happens to this franchise or impacts it going forward.
Well, one guy who was in the hockey business and still is, he's former NHLer Carlo Colaiacovo, who's the co-host of the morning show in Toronto. And here he is earlier this morning on his show, First Up. Listen to this.
See that there's a disconnect between the players and the coach, which is why I wouldn't opt to make a coaching change with this team. I've said it from day one, and I'm going to stay with it till now. The Maple Leafs don't have a coaching problem. They don't have a GM problem. They have a player problem. The players that this team has trusted for the last 5 years are all great players, but together they are just not capable of getting the job done.
It's an interesting comment because there's several ways you can take a look at it, because I understand what Carlo's saying, but then you can say, well, the coach has to get those players to be able to play together. And you can also say, if they're not coming together, maybe it's because they don't have chemistry to come together, and that's on the GM. So I understand his point, but you can take that so many different ways and break it down, right?
Well, you start, you know, yes, the players have underperformed this year, last year against Montreal a few years ago. You know, you can go back to the beginning of, this is a 7-year run for Matthews, Marner, Nylander together. And in none of the 7 years have those three guys basically put their heads together and their talent together and their skills together and have taken over a playoff series. And they all have the ability to do it. They're phenomenally talented players. And they're the guys that have to lead this franchise and push this franchise forward. They're chosen by Kyle Dubas. They're put out in those situations. They were signed long-term by Kyle Dubas. So his belief was, we're going to have the most talented top four in the league. No one else is going to be able to compare to that. And frankly, when you break it down, very few teams can. But that doesn't seem to matter at playoff time when Marchessault is scoring a hat trick for Vegas, or guys like that around the league are doing, you know, what Pavelski's doing in Dallas. You know, is Pavelski as good as William Nylander? Not a chance. But Pavelski had 9 goals, I think, in that series with Seattle. You know, that's what the Leafs have never had. So you can go through what Carlos said. Is there a player problem? Yeah. But is it a player problem because the coach isn't good enough? I don't know. But I do know this. Against Montreal with a 3-1 lead, they came out scared in Game 5 and Game 6 and Game 7. They didn't play to win that series. They played to not lose. And you go back the year before that, they played Columbus in a best of 5. And they lost the final game 3-0 to a Columbus team. I don't know. The best player may have been Pierre-Luc Dubois. You look around what's happened. Tampa last year, they came home for Game 6 up 3-2. All they had to do was win one of the final 2 games, lost 6 and 7. If you go through
you get the feeling, though, that the pressure and the expectations are suffocating this group, that it's just too much to handle. So I have to ask you, how tough are you on this, guys? And how tough are the members of the media on these guys? You get the feel, is it a fan expectation? Is it, what is it exactly? No.
Well, first of all, you know, the talent, that's the problem. I would equate this, you love a rock band and you listen to them all the time and you can't get enough of their music. And then you go see them live. They have no energy and they're singing off tune. And you're wondering, what in the heck is going on here? This concert sucks. And I think that's a little bit like the Maple Leafs at playoff time. You know, Mitch Marner, 2-time first team All-Star, the only Maple Leaf winger to do that in the modern era. We're talking from like 1950 on. No other Leaf has been a 2-time first team All-Star in a row. He was very average in the playoffs. Auston Matthews, who scored more goals than any player in the league at even strength since he's entered the NHL, didn't score in the temp and didn't score in the Florida series. You can look and whatever. That band did not come together and did not, you know, wasn't able to produce when it mattered most. And I wonder, after a while, can the same coach and the same players get over the hump when, you know, if the coach is getting out coached every year and the players are getting outplayed every year, then something's wrong with the group.
I want to get to Matthews. Let's hear from him.
Long term?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, my intention is to be here. I think I've reciprocated that before, how much I enjoy playing here and what it means to me and the organization, my teammates, and how much I just enjoy being here. So,
how important to get that done before next season?
Yeah, I think that it's important, and you know, it'll all kind of work itself out in due time and just kind of go from there. But as far as everything else goes, I mean, it's like I've said before, I mean, I really do enjoy playing here, and it's a true honor. And the work that we're putting in to obviously continue to strive for that end result is extremely motivating.
So there you have it, Auston Matthews, who of course obviously says all the right things. His contract will be up in a year, and he talks about wanting to stay, and it's all going to play itself out in due time and all stuff like that. And they're trying to get something done there, and he feels pretty good about it going forward. And I'm going to make arguments, by the way, to hold on to Matthews in just a minute or two, right? I'm high on the player. I do realize that, you know, he underachieved in the playoffs big time. I thought he was almost a no-show in round two, which was extremely disappointing. The challenge that I have, besides all of that, which was obviously concerning, is that even though I'm going to make an argument that they should keep him in a minute, the challenge that I have is the body language. Steve, there's something that's off. Maybe you're used to seeing him like this. I don't think he smiles as much as he should. I don't think he looks as happy as he should. It seems like there's something troubling him, and I think it's more than the pressure. Do you get that same feel?
No, I just know him well enough to say that there is nothing he likes doing less than coming out and talking to media.
Oh,
he
got
doesn't
it.
Care for the media. He doesn't really respect the media. He doesn't like the process of, you know, when 30 or 40 people go to a Leaf practice and all of the interviews are scrums with cameras, and you don't really get to know anybody anymore. You don't get to talk to them. You don't get private conversations the way, you know, many of us grew up in the business, you know, connecting with people. And so, you know, Austin Matthews has been brought into this sort of homogeneous NHL that he's now a part of. But name a team that's won a Stanley Cup without a great first line center. I don't think you can. And I don't think you can win without one. And so if you let Matthews go, which I think would be a huge mistake, who's your number one center? Old, slow John Tavares? I don't think so. You can barely be a number two center at this point. And so you need an A defenseman, a number one center, a top flight, but not all-star necessarily, goaltender, and a very good coach. And every Stanley Cup winner has those things, pretty much. Everyone except the Carolina Hurricanes. I think of what year was it, 2005 or something?
Where they the Colorado Avalanche won it last year, with Nathan MacKinnon. The Tampa Bay Lightning won it for a couple of years with Braden Point. The St. Louis Blues won it with Ryan O'Reilly and Braden Schenn. Washington won it with Kuznetsov and Backstrom at center. The Pittsburgh Penguins won it a couple of times with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. The Chicago Blackhawks won it with Jonathan Toews. The Los Angeles Kings, maybe to a lesser degree, Anze Kopitar. No, he's pretty
not to a lesser savvy. Degree, Anze Kopitar to me.
Yeah,
he's one of the best players in the NHL.
Yeah, no, I think maybe Jeff Carter before that. The Boston Bruins won it with Patrice Bergeron. The Penguins again, Detroit. Probably Pavel Datsyuk, Anaheim, Ryan Getzlaf. Carolina, you're going back. Was it Eric Staal?
Eric Staal was the center, but they didn't have a really good defenseman on that team. And they're the exception to the rule. Although one of the Pittsburgh Stanley Cups, Chris Letang was hurt for. And so he didn't play. So they had probably the weakest defense that's ever won a cup.
No, Steve, your point is well taken. As a matter of fact, look, I'm not going to lie to you. The second that Toronto knocked off Tampa, and I saw Boston get knocked off by Florida, and I saw Colorado get knocked off by Seattle, I took a look at Toronto's top three centermen, Austin Matthews, John Tavares, and Ryan O'Reilly, and I went live on the air, on radio, on television, and on this podcast, and I said, the highway is opened up for Toronto. I think this is their cup to lose. At any point, even though they don't have a history of doing all that well in the playoffs, did you not feel the same way?
Absolutely, because the teams I thought would come out of the East, starting with Boston, then the New York Rangers, then maybe Carolina, but when they started losing people, you know, I believed less and less in Carolina, although when you watch them now, you have to believe more and more. I thought there was every opportunity for the Leafs to get through in the East. And I thought for a minute there that we might see an Edmonton-Toronto Stanley Cup final. And, you know, and of course, it didn't happen. And both teams wound up getting punched in the gut in round two. But I thought, again, I'll go back to the Leafs played the Habs. I forget what the year that Montreal went to the finals.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
And you know, to me, that was the worst defeat of this era with this team, because not just that because they had the 3-1 lead, but because of the possibility of the Canadian division and moving on to the finals and advance, and Montreal took advantage of it. God bless them for doing that.
And won game five and game seven in Toronto, by the way.
Yeah. And you know what? And the Leafs, I think in game six were like 12-0 in shots on goal in overtime and
13-2.
Yeah. And then they came back and scored. But my point is that was a great opportunity and they couldn't find a way. And this year, although it reminded me of one of the years ago when I think it was the 93 Canadians, when Pittsburgh was eliminated by the Islanders.
Correct. David Volek, game seven, overtime.
Yeah. When that happened, you know, it opened up possibilities for that team that kept winning in overtime. And sometimes you just have to be able to take advantage of the path that you have. And that's one of the flaws. You know, one of the flaws of this Leafs team and of the 20 players, I'm going to push goalies to a side for a second.
If I can, Steve, for the benefit of those watching, they did get eliminated by the greatest player of all time, arguably, right? Wayne Gretzky went into Toronto and scored a hat trick in game seven, one of which I believe was off of Ellett's skate at the time. And the Los Angeles Kings.
Yes. I might argue the best player of all time thing with you, but
you're a Bobby Orr kind of guy.
I'm a Bobby Orr guy.
I figure. Yeah. No. My dad tells me the same thing, but he grew up watching Bobby Orr. I grew up watching great Wayne Gretzky. I was born in 72, so I miss Bobby.
My first job in the NHL was covering the Calgary Flames, which I did from 1980 to 87. So I saw the greatest years of Gretzky's career.
Yeah,
in many playoff series against the Flames, and what a fantastic, you know, I think I watched the best hockey ever played.
Yeah,
so those Calgary Edmonton series,
amazing.
It was like nothing I've seen since.
That Gretzky goal in overtime, was it over Mike Vernon's shoulder? And Gretzky wasn't known for having the best slap shot, but sometimes when he got all of it, he got all of it. And by the way, you talked about the best hockey. To this day, I say the Canada Cup. And what was it in 87? That's three game series of three games of 6-5 for me. And a lot of, you know, once again, those who are older will probably talk about the Summit Series. But once again, I was born in 72. But that 87 Canada Cup is the best hockey I've ever watched in my life.
And the reason it's the best hockey you've ever watched in your life, it's because it's the best hockey that's ever been played and the most exciting hockey. The 72 series was more about the politics and the first time we'd ever seen the Russians and the NHL and the superiority and Canada, you know, just expected to beat them. And then they're behind and then they come back and all the things that went into that. And so it was fascinating theater, but it wasn't great hockey the way 87 was. Watch those games and the plays made and the players involved, and there's Gretzky and there's Lemieux and there's Coffey and there's Grant Fuhr in goal and Bossy and Trottier and
Dale Hawerchuk.
Yeah, it was so many great and players.
Russia had a first line of Krutov, Larionov, and Makarov.
Yeah,
with Fetisov on defense, and it was unbelievable.
They used to go in the group of fives. Yeah.
Hey, Steve, what a pleasure this is. Every time I talk to you, you are really, really, really good at what you do. Before I let you go, let's hear from Mitch Marner and general manager Kyle Dubas.
Another chance with the same four.
And I got, are you talking about like this whole team or just
you, John, Austin, Morgan?
I mean,
Willie.
Yeah. We all got years left on our contracts. I mean, I don't know. It's not up to us, but we got a lot of belief in this group. We got a lot of belief in that core, and you know, it sucks right now, but we got belief.
I mean, that's not up to me to decide. I think, you know, we're proud of our season, things that we were able to do over the course of it. I love these guys. You know, I don't want you.
All right. Okay. Not so sure who is that. The second
one was Morgan Rielly. The second
that was Morgan Rielly. Yeah. Do we have Kyle Dubas?
By the way, Morgan Rielly was far and away the best Maple Leaf in the playoffs.
100%.
No one was even close to him.
100%. The salmon and yellow back at Master Control. Do we have Kyle Dubas or not?
What I would say to that is that I think it requires me to have a full family discussion, Chris. So I can't. My family is a hugely important part of what I do. So for me to commit to anything without, you know, having a fuller understanding of what this year took on them is probably unfair for me to answer where I'm at. I wish I could give you more, but we haven't been able to have those full discussions yet. But it was a very hard year on them. And thus, it's tough for me to... What I would say is that I'm not going to... I definitely don't have it in me to go anywhere else. So it'll either be here or it'll be taking time to recalibrate, reflect on the seasons here. But you won't see me next week pop up elsewhere. I can't put them through that after this year.
Steve, the images we saw of Kyle Dubas during the playoffs in the press box in the Loge, of course, with Jason Spezza by his side, a much cooler Jason Spezza, and Kyle Dubas with the fans getting on his case, and they are obviously getting under his skin. You saw him exchange pleasantries with the fans. You saw him upset at officials, upset at calls, throw water bottles, all that stuff. You can tell that he was really consumed by these playoffs. And what an answer, eh? Really coming from the heart on that one. What do you think he's going to do?
I think it goes back to Shanahan. Because if Shanahan is kept, I believe Dubas will be the general manager if he wants to be the general manager. Well, we can't sit here and know is, was there stress on his marriage this year? Was there stress from his parents? You know, has there been a situation with one of his children? You know, are there other things that are not hockey related? Because the Kyle Dubas that we saw in that press conference yesterday and the Kyle Dubas we saw in the playoffs was not one we've seen ever before. He spoke from the heart yesterday like he never has before. And he clearly let it be known that there's more at play here than the hockey job. And, whether who knows what, his wife thinks of him working 24/7 or, whether the kids are upset or whoever, everyone has a home life and everyone has that. And, we've all lived through it in our own way and in our own, lives. So I perfectly understand where Kyle's coming from, but, I think there would have been jobs for him if the Leafs weren't interested. But I think Shanahan wanted to sign him last summer, and ownership would not let him do that. And so I believe that Shanahan will get that opportunity again. But he worked the whole year knowing the owners didn't want him to get an extension. And that's a hard thing to go through.
Yeah, we talked about Austin Matthews before, and I said I'd get back to it. I understand he underachieved. Really, I did. I do, but... For the most part, in the last 6 or 7 years, he's led this team in points. And when he hasn't led them in points, it's because he's probably been injured and missed anywhere between 8 to 20 games. And if you take a look at his points per game, he would be number one or number two. He's a 25-year-old number one center who has 60 goals in him and over 100 points in him. And if you make Austin Matthews expendable and you trade him, man, you're really going to have to get something in return because your other two centermen, one's under contract, one won't be. But, I mean, they're both 32 years old, and it wouldn't make sense at all. So I know you said if Shanahan's back, Dubas will be back if he wants to be back. Is there any chance that if Shanahan's back, he looks at Mark Hunter? Because at one point he made a decision. It was Dubas over Hunter, and Dubas got the job. Is there any chance that you can see the Hunter brothers taking over in Toronto?
Zero.
Zero. Wow. Zero. Wow.
Mark Hunter had his opportunity when it was a first among equals situation. One was running one part of the organization, one was running the other part of the organization, and the Leafs had to make a choice. They had Lou Lamoriello as general manager, and Shanahan decided, Lou's run his course. I'm going to make a decision. He decided on Kyle. Mark left and never returned, so to speak, to the NHL, and is back, running, the best junior operation in the country and doing that fabulously well. But yes. I don't. The only way they would ever turn to Mark Hunter is if Kyle chose to leave, or they decided that they were going to let him go. And I don't see the, any reason why they would choose to let him go, because yeah. I don't know where you find anyone. You know how hard it is to find a good general manager.
I hear you.
Look, anyone who's better than yeah. he is at the job.
I think Craig Button said something very interesting. I believe it was yesterday, where he said, you know, Scotty Bowman, at one point, he told the players in Detroit that he was going to make them and things very uncomfortable if they were going to be able to take the next step. And he did, and they went on to win Stanley Cups. And he says they need somebody in Toronto that's going to make the players accountable. But
that has to come from the coach.
Yeah, but general, you know, manager, but I was going to say that. Didn't they have that when Mike Babcock as a coach? And then they have that from Lou Lamoriello as a general manager. Like, they've gone through so many different paths of Lou Lamoriello as the general manager, now Kyle Dubas, as Mike Babcock as a coach, as Paul Maurice as a coach, as Sheldon Keefe as a coach. Like, I don't know what they have to do. Like, I don't think anyone can see the core four coming back. So I'll end it with this. What would you do? I'm putting you on the spot here, but you're a big boy with tons of experience, so I know you can take it and thick skin. What would you do, and what do you think MLSC will do?
Well, I said earlier that I would replace, you know, the president, which would replace the GM, which would replace the coach.
I got it.
But I'm going to put an asterisk beside that. I would have to have candidates for all those positions that I believe are better than the people that you'd be letting go. So then you move to what will they do? I believe Shanahan will be back. I believe Dubas will be the general manager. And I think they're going to have a long and hard decision and discussion about Sheldon Keefe, the coach. Because you look right now, there are four teams left in the NHL. Three of them have first-year experienced coaches behind their benches. Peter DeBoer goes into Dallas. They're playing, you know, for a spot in the finals. Bruce Cassidy yeah. goes to Vegas. Same thing. Turns that team around. You know, these are Paul Maurice. Same thing with Florida. These are good long-term NHL coaches. Surely there's somebody out there that's had some kind of playoff success that can point to that Sheldon Keefe can't. And if there's a flaw, Sheldon Keefe's had very good regular seasons with the Leafs. And they've accomplished a lot, in not just in wins and losses, but in style of play and becoming better defensively and cutting down chances and all the things coaches are supposed to do to make your team better. And he's done that. What he hasn't been able to do is get them to elevate their games when it mattered most. And they need someone that can do that.
He is Steve Simmons of the Toronto Sun, and you can follow him on Twitter at SimmonsSteve. And he is the best-selling author of The Lost Dream and Lanny. It doesn't happen very often. Like I said, I'm hoping it can happen more often, Steve. It is always an extreme pleasure for me. Thank you so much for everything you brought to the table tonight, as you always do. Thanks again. Have a great night.
All right. You too, and enjoyed it as always.
Thank you very much. There you have it. Steve Simmons of the Toronto Sun. I'm Marinaro. It is the Sick Podcast. And we go live Monday to Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you like it right now. If you want, share it with your friends. The more people, the more the merrier, the better it is. Tell your friends about it everywhere you go. Tell them about the Sick Podcast, because we're taking over the sports scene in Montreal. We're taking over the sports scene in Quebec. We're taking over the sports scene in Canada. And if you take a look at the way we've been ranked over the past year, we have established ourselves as the Montreal Canadiens, and when they're gone out of the playoffs, a hockey podcast that is a force to be reckoned with. And we're pretty excited about that. If you tend to agree with that, if you listen to us on Google, Apple, or Spotify, leave us a 5-star review. That's our way of feeling the love. Once again, brought to you in part by La Bita TB, embrace your true nature. XLMoto.com for all your motorcycle and scooter needs. And of course, big dealers of the Piaggio Group, number one in North America for the last 5 years. And Energy Transportation Group, recently named by Deloitte and CIBC as one of Canada's best managed companies. Comes as no surprise to me. Congratulations are in order for my buddies Mike Cinquino and Sean Girard. I am so, so proud of them. That's a great spot to work. For all of you watching, on social media, the Sick community. You are my Sick army. I can't wait for us to get together. I think it's going to happen in the next month. I've been promising you that for a while. We're working on something and just can't wait to meet all of you and shake hands with all of you and take a picture with all of you and do what we love to do most. And that is talk sports, talk hockey, and talk about, of course, the Montreal Canadiens. For Agnello and Sammy at Master Control, their Cavallaro, be true to yourself. I am. Who am I? I'm Marinaro.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature.